Okay, so this is our Visakha Puja, and is a day of recollecting the Buddha as a as a refuge, recollecting the life of the Buddha in that. This is considered to be the day of the Buddha's of his birth, of his awakening, of his passing away. Full moon in May, they all took place on the same day. So it's a recollection of the Buddha's life. And particularly, in order to make it useful, you know, in a way how is that a refuge for us? And certainly the example of the Buddha seeking awakening, realizing awakening, and then leaving his life as a human being, he was born and he died, and he was a human being, that example is, because it's relevant for all of us in that this example of awakening the teaching for awakening is for human beings. It's not for celestial beings, or it's not for some immortal condition of some sort, being of some sort. The example of liberation in the world. So it's important to reflect, recollect how to hold it, how to view that. So there's just a very simple statement that the Buddha gives, reflecting on his own life. Before he was fully awakened, was that him reflecting and considering, why do I, a being that is subject to birth, aging, sickness and death, change and alteration, why do I seek after that which is also subject to birth, aging, sickness, death, change, alteration? Why do I keep chasing after that? Why don't I look for something better than that? That's a worthy reflection for all of us. What are we seeking? What are we looking for? What are we caught up in? What do we think is important? What do we get excited about? What do we get depressed about? And you think, well, there it is. All that we're running after, running around with, subject to birth, aging, sickness, death, change, and alteration. Oh, it's not very bright. So it's just, and the Buddha is just giving that example of, that's what he himself, how he spent his life until he sort of made this very clear aspiration to be able to be free from that, and that is a. I think it's a, it's a really important consideration, because it brings it back down to something, rather practical or to a certain degree ordinary, not mundane, but ordinary, because we can so easily conceive, or we wish to conceive, of say awakening, liberation, as something so say utterly refined or utterly other it takes it into the realm of something that is beyond our capability of realizing or of living, and that's exactly what the Buddha didn't want. That sense of giving attention to that which is worth or that which bears fruit for our freedom from suffering, freedom from stress, like that allows us to disentangle ourselves from that process of complication, so that one of the epithets of the Buddha that I think is really important to be considering, again, as of course it's how he manifested his life, but it's also as an example for us to try to emulate or follow in his footsteps or make real. And that's in Pali, that vicacarana sampanno, perfect in knowledge and conduct. There's a level of conduct that is informed by his knowledge, by his awakening, and that there's an integrity to how he lived his life and set an example, and that say that awakened knowledge doesn't make one incapable of being a conducting oneself in a really skillful and alert manner. Thinking of what comes to mind is just off the top of my head is the story from the Book of Discipline, the Vinaya, on the when the Buddha and Ananda were walking around the monastery of Savatthi and coming across a dwelling place where there was a sick bhikkhu who was suffering from dysentery. He was completely kind of wasted in terms of no energy, and he was couldn't look after himself, and he had he was lying in his own excrement, and so he was in really bad shape, and then the Buddha and Ananda. I mean, the first thing he did was check, and he said, "Was anybody looking after you?" And, "No, nobody's looking after me." And then the Buddha and Ananda Ananda, on the instruction or initiative of the Buddha, go and get some water again. So the two of them cleaned him up, cleaned up the kuti, and got him back into his bed, and then the Buddha calling a meeting of the sangha and asking about this bhikkhu and admonishing them for not taking care of the sick bhikkhu, and that. So he said, looking after the sick was the same as looking after the Buddha, the Tathagata. So he placed it on that level. And so that there's this sense of caring for each other as a human, within that human condition, and even if somebody is, maybe doesn't have friends or he doesn't have a charming personality, still, you look after them, you care for them, and it's this aspect of conduct that is beautiful and is selfless, because that's in terms of what do we think of perfect in knowledge and conduct. That knowledge is not, even though the Buddha had knowledge of all sorts of things that. Come through, through super mundane knowledge or through psychic powers or whatever, but the knowledge of suffering and the end of suffering, knowledge of what is in accordance with truth and what's not in accordance with truth. So that knowledge of what's right, what's wrong. I mean, it's just on that fundamental level. Because if you've got knowledge of all the deva realms or whatever. But you can't pay attention and be willing to look out for each other as human beings, and that's not such useful knowledge. Might be good for sitting around and talking about, but it's the Buddha was not just a philosopher, he was a doer. He lived his knowledge in that sense, that perfect in knowledge and conduct. So that the sense of knowledge of the the relinquishment of that self-centeredness, self-obsession. It's one of the things that when the Buddha, just speaking about what is kind of amazing of the presence of the Buddha in the world, and is that beings who are normally obsessed with, say, sensuality, gratification, are willing to turn to renunciation and restraint. Beings who are normally obsessed with conceit are willing to relinquish and dwell in that simplicity of not self. Normally, beings are tend to distraction and excitement. They will turn to that which is peaceful, seeking peace and dwelling in what is peaceful. It's amazing when the beings who are normally caught up in ignorance and a lack of true understanding willingly seek out true knowledge and understanding. That's amazing, an amazing thing. As a quality of the Buddha, that encouraging us to say through his example, through the very fact of how he lived his life, lived and lived his truth, it encourages beings, human beings, to seek out what is what's truly, truly peaceful. So in that living an example of awakened knowledge and compassion, starting from that inclination that before he's even awakened, why do I get caught up in things that are not that useful? And how do I find a real way? And being motivated and having the same resilience of mind to stick with it. That's one of the qualities that the Buddha said allowed him to be liberated, that he wasn't content with partial knowledge or partial. He wasn't satisfied until he found true knowledge. And of course he teaches a path of contentment, but it's interesting that he points, it's one of the qualities. It's just that you're just not being content with limited knowledge and limited realization. He was able and willing to keep encouraging himself to seek until he realized freedom. And that is, and because that's, you know, as human beings, and I don't think any of us have to go very far to recognize in ourselves how willing we are to, you know, near enough is good enough. You know, it's too difficult. It's sort of, you know, practice is always so, you know, we're so incredibly diligent in our practice. Next retreat or next year, you know, or when we, you know, we go to the new monastery or whatever, then I'll really practice. And so but you know, the Buddha was, that's one of these really special qualities, that the Buddha was able to keep himself true to his aspiration. And then realizing awakening, and then being willing to teach, to devote himself to teaching, and then laying out a way of training that was extremely refined and detailed. And then even in approaching the end of his life, he's on his deathbed. He really is dying, and then in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the account of his, you know, his last days and in his final moments. And then Subhadra the wanderer has a doubt that he would like to have the Buddha clear up. And Ananda, who is, I mean, he's no slouch in terms of kindness and compassion. And he says, you know, the Buddha's dying, just leave him alone. You know, and then the Buddha is he kind of overhears, and he said, no, it's fine, you know, let him come in, ask his question, I'm sure it'll be helpful for him. And it was. But that's you know, in his final moment. So it's like just this incredible example of perfect in knowledge and conduct. So it's a this wonderful example for us as human beings, even 2,500 plus years down the line, is still very, very relevant. So that sense of being able to take a religious ceremony or a religious, say, a holy day, and make it into something that is beneficial for ourselves and for others to be, rather than putting, because it's easy to do, you know, it's like that reification of either a person or a principle, a teaching, and then make it so that it is distant, it's far away, and not really accessible. And that's one of the qualities that the Buddha, or the Buddha described his teaching is open aiko. It's leading inwards. It's drawing. We have to draw the teachings into the heart. We have to draw the example of the Buddha into the heart. We have to be able to lead it inwards. It can't be objectified external to us. It can't be something other. It can't be some other time, some other place, something other. We have to lead it and draw it inwards into the heart. So that the Buddha's life is an example, and it's also, it's an example that helps us to gain a perspective on how do we implement this path? What is the path that we need to be reflecting on and implementing? And of course, there's so many ways that could be described or parsed out. But what comes to my mind this evening, anyway, is that the Buddha's gradual instruction, that it was something that he repeated over and over and over again, as a means of leading people into the the relevance of his teaching and to the the experience of the fruits of the teachings and the practice. So I think it's first comes up when the Buddha instructing the merchant son Yasa shortly after the Buddha had taught his first five disciples and led them to awakening through instruction and teaching on particularly on not self, but there was in that very first rains retreat where he began to teach, and then the merchant son comes out from Benares and meets the Buddha, and then the Buddha gives him instruction, this gradual instruction on dana, the benefits of generosity, what generosity, how important that is, on the importance of virtue, of the living a life of precepts, of training, of integrity, the fruits of goodness, and the word is like sangha, and it's like on the heavens, but it's also like that yes, there are fruits in other lives, but also in this life the heavenly qualities that we can be drawing close to and cultivating and living in, and then the drawbacks of sensuality, of pursuit of of things that are just agitate and clutter the mind. The adinava, the kind of the harm or the in Thai, it's sort of like the toad, the punishment or the difficult problematic results that we reap from our actions. And the fruits of renunciation, of relinquishment, of letting go, and that this is not a path of acquisition, accumulation. It is one of relinquishment, and then teaching the Four Noble Truths, and so that pointing to the Four Noble Truths as aspects of experience, like our life is not about personality or events. These are aspects of experience, and that dukkha is it's an aspect of experience that we don't want it, but we keep running into it. And the cause of dukkha being these unskillful, unwise desire processes that we tend to fall back on and get motivated by. But it's an unskillful desire. And then the cessation of suffering, a category of experience, an aspect of experience that we tend not to pay much attention to. And then its cause, way of practice leading to the ending of suffering. But these are all aspects of experience. So it's like this is a phenomenological teaching as opposed to a philosophical treatise on anything or a belief system. Just paying attention to experience and what do we prefer? When you really look at it closely, we prefer to not suffer. But then, so much of our attempts at non-suffering tend to be, tainted by desire and attachment and confusion. So we still end up unsatisfied by it. This really requires a training, a living, a life of devotion to wakefulness, devotion to waking up. So that then, of course, the Buddha is the premier example of that. As we reflect on the Buddha's life and on the example of the Buddha. It's this. How do we looking at the qualities of the Buddha? So in the various epithets, descriptions of the Buddha, then the qualities that are repeated over and over again are qualities of wisdom, compassion, of purity. And so that just trying to motivate ourselves to be more drawn to wisdom rather than confusion. How do we get more drawn to compassion, kindness, a sense of caring for ourselves and for others, in a really sensitive manner, and purity, not in a kind of a judgmental or I'm so pure type of perspective, but it's more like, no, I mean, it's just quite natural it's something that has been purified is much more satisfying. It's like, yeah, I mean, the difference between, say, filtered, purified water and water you get from a ditch somewhere. I mean, it's just different. It's for our benefit and well-being. And it is a really looking out for ourselves in a really wise way, but also how we live with others and for the benefit of others. So that this being, the Visakha Puja Day, just taking the example of the Buddha, the life of the Buddha, and draw it inwards and use it as a means of nourishing one's own aspiration for awakening and for living a skillful life, a wise life. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.